the vesting of the property in the creditor, in the secured creditor, is part of a process. In order to achieve that process, achieve the forced vesting, it starts with the debtor's intention to surrender the property. And so I believe, as I understand the concept to be, or the argument to be, is that surrender and forced vesting are part of one process. And it would be consistent under 1322b9 for the vesting of the property to be part of the surrender process. And therefore, it can fit within the three elements set forth in the Rash decision. And I do cite a case, In re Sagendorf, which is a case out of Massachusetts in 2010. And I definitely, if anyone wants to read this case and understand the arguments, I think it's a really good decision because it does set forth the arguments on both sides. Now, the Sagendorf case does come to the conclusion that the court does not have the authority to force vest the secured collateral in the secured creditor. So this is an example of a case that comes to a different conclusion. Again, I don't think this is really settled law. I think the Southern District in this instance is somewhat on the cutting edge, but I understand the rationale. And the court in Sagendorf didn't accept the rationale for a number of reasons. Number one, whereas the surrender of the property, the court defined as offering to cede property rights to another, the court defined vesting as the acceptance by the grantee of an offer to transfer ownership. And the court viewed those as two separate matters. And the court didn't view one as part of the overall process where you could construe the surrender to be part of the vesting process. The court also found that 1322b9 was a permissive section of the code. The court may confirm a plan over the objection of a creditor, whereas 1325a5 is more of a mandatory provision, and the court didn't construe, when read together, a requirement that you read forced vesting as part of the surrender process. And so I think this is still up in the air. I think this is an issue that's still to be decided, but it's definitely within the Southern District a very specific vehicle that can be used to deal with a secured creditor through the plan confirmation process. Now, the forced vesting isn't the only way of approaching a disposition of real property. The plan does provide in two different sections for the surrender of property. And so the debtor can choose between forced vesting or can choose to surrender the property to the secured creditor. So at the outset of the case, debtor's counsel can make a decision here as to choosing one or the other. The argument I most often see as to why a debtor's attorney would recommend forced vesting over surrender is a situation where the property is surrendered pursuant to the plan. The automatic stay terminates per the terms of the plan when the plan is confirmed, but the creditor does not immediately foreclose. And in some instances, I've seen cases where years go by and the creditor does not foreclose on the collateral. And the issue is, what liabilities can the debtor be exposed to if a creditor chooses not to exercise its right of foreclosure? And the situations most often discussed are property taxes as one example. In the state of Texas, ad valorem taxes accrue each year, and the liability for the ad valorem tax rests with the owner of the property. And until the creditor forecloses, that liability continues. And so therefore, if you have a surrender of the property under the plan and then no subsequent foreclosure, title remains and the potential liability remains on the part of the debtor. Although, from my own experience, most of the average ad valorem tax entities rarely seem to seek recovery through liability of the individual, they're more usually interested in recovering their tax claim against their collateral, which is the real estate itself. So I don't know how often you see ad valorem tax entities seeking personal liability claims, but it is there. It is an issue. More often where I see the issue come up is with respect to homeowner associations. The homeowner associations have a lien, continuing lien on the property as well. And they also have a claim against the individual that owns the property. And where I've seen this come up most often is situations where post-petition homeowner association fees come due. They're not paid. The debtor has surrendered the property, but no foreclosures occurred. And so the debtor has potential exposure. And that, I think, is more of a realistic scenario where debtor's counsel needs to view that in terms of potential exposure to their client. The third area is other types of tort liability. As long as the debtor owns the property, if there's any type of tort exposure by someone who might be on the property and is injured, obviously the ownership of the property remains until there's a foreclosure. And so there's some exposure. And so the argument for forced vesting over surrender is, if you do the forced vesting, title to the property transfers. And at that point, from that moment of transfer, you lose the ongoing exposure or potential exposure that the debtor may have for the property under ad valorem tax issues or homeowner association issues or tort liability issues. And so the argument there is forced vesting benefits the debtor because it avoids those liabilities. Now, before getting into the specific provisions of the plan itself,